Is this? Oh, okay, it's working. Ha! Hello, this is DJ Desert Rose, and welcome to my show, Drawing the Line, Real People, Real Advice. Listen in on Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. I give advice on careers, relationships, friendships, and family. However, I do not give any legal or medical advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact a professional, such as a lawyer, or if you need medical advice, or if you have a medical emergency, please contact your personal doctor or dial 911. So this is another episode of parent-child relationships, but in this one, I'm going to be tackling a few subjects. One of them is yelling and why it doesn't work. Now, before I go into what the experts say about yelling, I'm going to tell you why yelling doesn't work. Number one, it's loud. Number two, it's really obnoxious to listen to two people scream at each other from the top of their lungs, causing anyone within a 5-mile radius to go deaf. And number three, nothing gets accomplished. Also, before I get into the whole expert thing, this is going to be why yelling doesn't work on both sides and how to come up with better solutions to the problem. So first off, let's go into why parents should not yell at kids. Every parent loses their cool every once in a while. Yelling at your kid does not make you a horrible, unfit parent. It happens. I mean, deal with a kid, or kids if you have more than one child. Deal with the crying, the tantrums, the exhaustion, the fights between siblings, the constant back talk, and see how patient you are. And speaking of all that, this brings me back to a project that was called Baby Think It Over, which I had to do in high school, where students took home for the weekend and took care of a doll programmed to cry like a real baby. If that wasn't my final for my health class, I would have tried to drown it. Damn thing would never shut up. Don't let that fool you. I'm actually great with kids. Complete strangers have let me hold their kids. What does that tell you? Anyway, so back to the issue at hand. Experts say that while parents yelling at kids does happen, it is a very ineffective way to deal with the problem. I recently checked out an article called Parents, Yelling at Teens Can Backfire, and it is from usatoday.com. What is the key to raising a happy, satisfied, respectful teenager? According to the article, certainly not harsh verbal discipline, and that's exactly what many parents do. According to Ming-Tae Wang, author and assistant professor in the Department of Psychology and the School of Education at the University of Pittsburgh, says, and I quote, "Shouting and yelling are ineffective and can be harmful. This may explain why so many parents say that no matter how loud they shout, their teenagers don't listen." Well, here's my question to the parents. Would you want to listen if someone was yelling at you? Also, 13-year-olds who received a lot of harsh verbal discipline had a higher chance of depression by the time they turned 14, according to studies published in the journal Child Development. Wang says that these teens are, quote, "more likely to exhibit problem behavior such as anger, aggression, vandalism, and misconduct, as opposed to teens who grew up in homes where verbal assault was not used as a form of discipline." Many psychologists who work with teens and parents urge these families to pay close attention to these studies. When you expose children to prolonged stress, and it does not have to be severe stress, you increase the risk of all kinds of physical and mental health problems, says Alan Kasdan, professor of psychology and child psychiatry at Yale University and author of The Everyday Parenting Toolkit. Not only does yelling at a teen not work, but hitting teens doesn't accomplish anything either. Hitting a teen is more likely to cause more problems rather than solve problems. Kids, especially teenagers, want to be respected, just like parents want their children to respect them. Now, I've talked back to my parents, who hasn't, but I've never hit my parents. However, I have known some teenagers who have gotten into fistfights with their parents. When you hit a teenager, it causes a few things. One, the teen could shut down, and two, the teen could react just as violently. Another article I came across was from the Huffington Post, and it's called "Yelling at Kids Could Be Just as Harmful as Physical Discipline," study suggests. Harsh verbal discipline from parent accomplishes nothing but increase their child's chance of being depressed. This includes cursing at the child, humiliating the kid, and saying negative things such as they're dumb, lazy, and worthless. At a very young age, the more kids hear these negative outbursts, the more they believe it as they grow older. Adolescence is a very sensitive period when kids are trying to develop their self-identities. Study leader Ming-Tae Wang told the Wall Street Journal, When you yell, it hurts their self-image. It makes them feel they are not capable, that they are worthless and are useless. Wang also states that even flying off the handle only so often is still just as bad as losing your cool all the time. another article that I came across was called Yelling at Your Kids Leads to Worse Behavior, and it was from newser.com. The article talks about how yelling at your kids won't fix the problem, but may actually end up making things worse. Researchers discovered that kids who suffered from harsh verbal discipline were more likely to end up with behavior problems as opposed to parents who got mad at their kids without their voices matching that of an opera singer trying to break a vase. That vase thing? The article didn't actually say that. Anyway, the article goes on to state that kids feel more willing to take responsibility for their actions when they're scolded. A small scolding is nowhere near the same as verbal abuse. Not even close. There is a big difference between saying what you did was wrong and you're completely worthless by someone they respect. Kids react better to calm yet firm voices rather than loud, condescending ones. Another article I came across was called The Danger of Yelling at Your Kids and How to Be a Calmer Mom, and it's an article on Yahoo. The article actually begins with, hey, a mom, sharing an episode with her readers about how one day she went flying off the handle with her 5-year-old son and immediately regretted it. The article also mentions steps you can take to keep your cool. Psychologist Matthew McKay, PhD, says studies have shown that parents who express a lot of anger in front of their kids end up with less empathetic children. These kids are more aggressive and more depressed from peers from calmer parents, and they do worse in school. Anger has a way of undermining a kid's ability to adapt to the world, and this can actually affect younger children way worse. When kids are at a very young age, their parents are the center of their universe. Before you start screaming at your child, stop and think. Think about what you were really angry at before you go off. Yelling may not seem like it can do some damage, but it can. Once you have assessed the situation, calmly explain to your kid why you were not happy with them, but still do it firmly so that they know you are serious. And we are going to take a quick break. You are listening to Drawing the Line with Desert Rose, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. And we're back. So, how's everybody doing? Good. That's nice to hear. Oh, okay. Oh, wow. Now, I just got done with the whole parents yelling at kids thing, and I'm going to try and tackle kids yelling at parents and how parents can handle it. I understand wanting to yell back at your parents. I do. It is not uncommon for teens to think, my parents aren't respecting me, so why should I respect them? They don't know everything. Believe me, I was a teen once. I know what it's like. But just in the same way that parents yelling at kids doesn't work, neither does a kid or kids yelling at their parents work. And yes, the door slammed to the face also is not a good idea. Don't try it. I came across an article from MayoClinic.com and it was called Parenting Tips for Teens. One of the tips is to show your love. Raising a healthy, happy teen. Although they are still just teens and you as the parent are the boss and they have to listen to you, that doesn't mean you shouldn't respect them or their feelings. And when you yell at your teen, a lot of teens will yell back. Some may shut down. It all depends on the teen. If you want your teen to respect you, you need to show them that respect. This reminds me of a George Carlin quote. Respect should not be given, it should be earned. It should be based on the parent's performance, which personally, even though I'm not a parent at all, I agree with that. Trust me, it's really hard for you to expect someone to respect you if you don't respect them. Yeah, good luck getting that. Another tip was not putting too much pressure on your teen. Remember, your teen is still young and still growing. They have just entered into a stage of their lives where they are figuring out who they are as a person. Don't make them feel like they have to be like what you were as a teen or what you wish you were like as a teen. Give them some room to rebel a tiny bit. If they want to wear a crazy hairstyle, let them. So as long as they're not hurting themselves or others, I don't see the harm in coming home with spiked neon green hair. Another article I came across was called 10 Ways to Deal with a Teenager Who Talks Back from education.com. Now, I'm not going to read all of the tips, but I will mention a few. One of them is, when dealing with teenagers as a parent, you want to make sure they understand that you have rules set up for the house. For example, curfew is at 10 p.m., and you also need to make sure your teen understands that there will be consequences if they do not adhere to the rules, such as, I don't know, no TV for a week. But talking about it isn't enough. As a parent, you need to follow through with it. Try to imagine this scenario. You have set an 11:30 curfew for your teenager. Then one night, 11:30 comes and goes, and your teen is not home. You start growing frantic and then irritated. Where the heck is that little brat? And then at 3:30 a.m., your teen comes in, and you're probably thinking either my kid is doing this on purpose or they suck at telling time. But whatever the reason, when you get a chance to, you need to tell your teen, so-and-so, or whatever you named your kid, I specifically told you that curfew was at 11:30. You came in this morning at 3:30, and I want you to know that this is unacceptable. I also warned you that if you did not adhere to my rules, there would be consequences, so there will be no TV for a week. Yes, the teen will protest. It happens. But you as the parent have to stand your ground and mean what you say. If you say there will be consequences, tell your teens what those consequences are and follow through with them. And no, I'm not talking about if you come home at 3:30 one more time, I'm going to break your neck. That's not disciplining your teen. That's threatening them with physical violence. Don't do that. Another tip was if your teen refuses to do something you asked them to do and talks back to you, and do not yell back. Threatening or yelling at your teen will only make matters worse. If your teen is driving you crazy with their bad attitude, and they will drive you crazy, let them know that the discussion will take place later when you both have calmed down. Another tip is being consistent. Just like number one, follow through on what you say. Consequences are consequences, end of story, and they should not be put up like a bargaining chip. Also, do not lecture your child. Lecturing your child only makes it worse because your teen will drown you out. Just say what you need to say and leave it at that. Another tip is to give your kid the respect that you would want and stay away from the name calling. Kids have their moments when you just want to strangle them while calling them a brat at the same time. Instead of going on a verbal meltdown and getting into a scream fest with your teen, try calmly telling them that their behavior is unacceptable, why it's unacceptable, and what you would like to see done. I'm going to give you guys two scenarios, and you have to tell me which one works better. This one, so-and-so, your behavior is very rude and unacceptable. Name calling is never okay, and I will not tolerate it. I feel like we can't communicate with each other and understand each other when stuff like this happens. So I'd like you to please keep your temper in check. Or this one, so-and-so, you are a worthless human being. You're disrespectful and you're lazy and spoiled. It's a miracle that I've put up with you all these years, and if you keep this attitude up, you'll amount to nothing. Now, I would like to say my own two cents on both of the matters. Teens yell at parents and parents yell at teens. It happens. No parent ever goes into parenting knowing exactly what to do and how to do it. There is no such thing as parenting 101. You are not made to be a parenting expert. Like with most things, you learn as you go. Yelling and threatening doesn't work, and this goes both ways. Screaming, name-calling, and whatnot only makes the situation worse. What may have started off as a minor issue could turn into something even bigger, something that never should have gotten out of hand in the first place. Also, another reason why yelling at your child doesn't work is that it teaches your kid to be afraid of you. Parenting by fear, in my opinion, is never good. You are not a dictator, you are a parent. Be firm with your child, but don't bully them. And we're going to take a quick break. You are listening to Drawing the Line with Desert Rose, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. And we are back. So, there is something else that I really wanted to talk about, and I just, like, I'm sorry, I have to get this off my chest. Now, I'm not the best driver in the world, and I haven't even been driving for that long. However, I think I know enough to know what you shouldn't. Actually, after this, there's actually a little mini story, but not too much. Anyway, so... However, I think I know enough to know what you should and should not do while driving. Trust me, you don't have to be, like, an expert driver to know what you should and should not do on the road. You pick it up pretty fast. And, you know, hey, some of you are probably thinking, oh dear God, I've got to listen to a whiny college student complain about driving. No, what I'm doing here is telling all beginning drivers my own experiences behind the wheel. Why? Because driving can be a scary thing. Trust me, I know. But in reality, there's really nothing to be afraid of. So this is only going to take a few minutes while I talk about this. And all you people out there who are just learning how to drive, I want you to take notes because I'll be your teacher for the next 5 minutes. Let's start with your blinkers. You flip it up when you want to turn right and down when you want to go left. Those blinkers are there for other cars to let them know that you want to come over. However, that does not mean that those cars will let you in, which is also why you need to look before you change lanes. I can't even begin to tell you how many close calls I've had from seeing what others have had just because someone did not look to change lanes. And in fact, I know a few people who have gotten into car accidents because, why? They did not look when they were changing lanes. Always look, even if you think you're in the clear. Always look, so you never know. Second of all, when you're learning to drive, do not rely on other drivers to be paying attention. In fact, I've been told that that's pretty much almost the number one rule of driving. Never rely on other drivers to be paying attention. And never ever rely on other drivers to predict what you're going to do. You have to be paying attention. Also, don't be afraid of the car. The car you are driving is your servant. It's your friend. It's your buddy. It's your soulmate. Okay, maybe not really your soulmate, but you get the idea. It's not going to do anything unless you tell it to. You know what? You can have the turn signals, the gas, and the brake, everything. But without that, the steering wheel is like pretty much the most important thing. One of the most important things. Like I said, you could have like the radio, the defroster, the turn signals, the hazard lights. But trust me, that car ain't going anywhere unless you have a steering wheel. I know what it's like to be afraid to do something in your car because you have so many questions going at once. Trust me, I feel you guys, I do. If you start to get nervous, find a safe place to pull over, turn off your engine, and just sit there and relax for a bit. What I like to do is pull against a curb, turn the engine off, and put on my iPod, listen to some calming music, and do some deep breathing exercises. That's what I like to do. Some people like to smoke cigarettes, some people like to talk themselves through it. You know, whatever works for you. But just remember, the car is more afraid of you than you are of it. Third of all, and this is the last one actually, not everyone uses their blinkers, and this kind of actually goes into number one. But in driving etiquette and safety, you really should. You really, really, really should. The person behind you or next to you is not a mind reader. They can't tell if you're going to turn right or not. Although I have heard that as you drive more and more, you are able to predict some people's possible movements. Now, as I've said before, even though your blinker is on, that does not automatically mean that you go where you want to go whenever you want. You need, once again, accidents happen that way. You need to turn on your blinker, look, and then go. Actually, no. You need to turn on your blinker, look quickly and make sure it's safe to go, and then go. And if it's not safe to go, just hang out there with your blinker on until you're in the clear. And sometimes people put their blinkers on at the last minute. I remember this one time when I was driving with a friend. She was dropping me off at my place, and this driver in front of us did two wrong things. One, he put his blinker on at the last minute, and two, he didn't even look. So all in all, it went like this. Oh, by the way, don't do that. Just don't do it. Please don't do it. No. Okay, so next up, I want to talk about relationships. Not exactly married, but just in the sense that you are with someone and you are committed to them. You don't have to be married to be committed to someone. Just look at me. I'm in a relationship. My boyfriend and I are very committed to each other. But are we married? No. And the both of us don't want to be married right now. Nor are we even thinking about it. In short, none of us are ready. Now, some people get into relationships because they are depressed and don't want to be alone. But I think that you have to ask yourself, are you getting into this relationship because you want to be with that person? Or are you doing so because you don't want to be alone? If it's the second, stop. Stop, 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 stop. You should be in a relationship because you want to, not because you don't want to be alone. Which gets me into the single life. There is nothing wrong with being single. I was single from 2007 to 2013. 6 years. 6 years before I got into a relationship. And honestly, I'm not gonna lie to you guys. I loved it. I really did. Now, that's not to say that I loved being single more than I loved being with my boyfriend, because I wouldn't change a thing about our relationship. And one of the reasons why our relationship is so successful is because we were really good friends for 2 or 3 years before we made it official. Being single doesn't automatically mean that you're alone. You know, you have your family, you have your friends. Having a boyfriend or a girlfriend does not make you, and not having one will not break you either. A relationship does not automatically dictate who you are or what you are. It never should. Being single can be a very good thing, because in that time when you are single, you learn so much about yourself. You give yourself room to grow, to learn and grow, to learn and change. And just because a lot of your friends are in relationships doesn't mean you have to be in one. And don't let the fear of being alone rule you. And for now, we're going to take another quick break, and I'm going to get back to this topic. You are listening to Desert Rose, and this is Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. We are back. hope you guys are having a good time, and I'm gonna get back into the whole relationship things. So I'm just gonna pick up where I left off. Don't let the fear of being alone rule you. If you want to be in a relationship, it'll come when it comes. It's much better to let it come naturally rather than to force it. Forced relationships don't work. If one person wants it and the other doesn't, then the relationship is being set up for failure. I once had a friend who is now married. We're actually not friends anymore, but you know, that's a different story, and I really don't want to get into that right now. But this girl had severe issues with being alone, to the point where she did not care if her husband or boyfriend or whatever treated her like garbage. And that's exactly what he did. He treated her like garbage. He called her fat. He called her worthless. He called her ugly. Every single name in the book that you can think of, he called her that. And as much as I would like to, as much as I would like to elaborate on some of the stuff that he called her, I can't swear on live radio, so let's just leave it at that. But yeah, he called her all sorts of names, and she was like a mom to him. She really was. She drove him everywhere, cleaned his room, fixed his dinner, did his laundry. Like, anything that a grown man should be doing themselves, she did. And I was just like, girl, what are you doing? This was before they were married, by the way, but I was like, girl, what are you doing? This is your fiance, not your kid. Stop babying him. I told her one of the reasons why he does not respect you is because he knows that you are going to baby him, and he knows that he can walk all over you and you'll never say anything about it. For some people, it's really easy to manipulate them. Now, I'm not saying manipulation is good, because it's not. It's never okay to manipulate someone. What I'm saying is that some people are easily manipulated because they give up the vibe that it's okay to manipulate them. It really is. That's the vibe they give off. There's nothing wrong with saying no every once in a while, because when you say no every once in a while and you stand your ground, people start respecting you. Nobody respects a doormat, and nobody respects a puppet. Anyway, so back to my friend. Ladies and her situation. Ladies, please don't do this. Being alone is a lot better than being with someone who makes you feel like you're alone. And my friend's husband made her feel like she was alone constantly. I remember the night before their wedding, I was there. The girl was crying. Not out of joy, not out of happiness. Those tears were not, oh my God, I'm so happy. My wedding's tomorrow. I'm getting married tomorrow. You know, we're going to be married. Meh. No. They were tears of complete misery. Why? Because her fiancé said something incredibly mean, which I'm not going to get into. It does not need to be put on the radio. Anyway, so my friend was in a very abusive situation, and although I really wanted to help her, there was nothing I could do. Why? Because she didn't want to help herself. I can't help you if you don't want to help yourself. And that's just how it is, you know? Help only works if you want to help yourself. There's a big difference between saying, I want help, and actually getting the help that you need. And once again, we're going to take a quick break. This is Desert Rose, and you are listening to Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu.
Can't get me out of the race. Oh, man.
are back. This is Desert Rose, and you are listening to Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m., only on radio.dominican.edu. So, I just remembered something. The whole, in my earlier segment of this episode, I mentioned teens yelling at parents and parents yelling at teens, and that gave me an idea to talk about anger issues and how to deal with them. So, another thing I would like to talk about is anger issues. People get angry. Everyone gets angry. It happens. I get angry. Your mom gets angry. Your dad gets angry. Your sister gets angry. Your dog gets angry. Your goldfish gets angry. The mailman gets angry. Bees get angry. Everybody gets angry. But, getting mad at someone or getting mad in general does not fix the problem. It makes it bigger. Now, I'm not saying you can't get mad. You know, you can be mad, but there are better ways to deal with your anger than to just start completely shouting. Before you get angry, stop and figure out what exactly you are mad about. This really helps to do because you never know. In the heat of the moment, you could end up saying something that you might regret. Think about what you're going to say before you say it, because once those words are out of your mouth, they're out, and there's no taking them back. Use iMessages instead of you messages. Saying, for example, so-and-so, I feel very hurt when you make fun of me when, I don't know, I'm wearing clown pants or something. Because when you use iMessages, they won't feel like the person you were talking to won't feel like you were attacking them. Saying you did this and you did that and you never doesn't work. For example, what do you think is the better scenario? This, so-and-so, I feel very hurt when I ask you to stop yelling at me and you don't. It makes me feel like I can't do anything right, and I personally would feel so much better if you would please stop, as opposed to this scenario. You know what? I've asked you a million times to stop yelling at me, and you never do because you never listen, and I don't think you care at all. Why am I even talking to you right now? You don't care about me. Which one do you think? I mean, let me ask you this. Say you were given those two scenarios. Put yourself in those two scenarios. Seriously, put yourself right now. Which one would you want to listen to? The first one I gave you, the iMessage one, you'd probably stop and think, oh, this person is really hurt by my actions. Maybe I should stop. And with the second one, you're probably thinking, oh my God, this person is just doing nothing but whine and whine and complain and moan and me, 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 I'm a crybaby. That's what they're probably going to think. And that's the last thing you want to get across them. When you tell someone that you are mad at them, you don't want to come across as a crybaby. You never want to come across as a crybaby. So using iMessages works. Using you messages does not work. Like I said, saying you did that and you did this and you never doesn't work at all, because the person you were saying this to will shut you up or they might fire back. And I've seen this happen. It's not a pretty sight. Don't be defensive, but do let the person who upset you know that they upset you in a calm, clear, firm way. Remember, I messages, not you messages. There is no you, there is I. And once again, we're going to take a quick break while I clear my throat. You are listening to Desert Rose, and this is Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu.
Save my soul.
We are back. Hey, what's up, everyone? This is, darn, I literally keep forgetting my name. hold on one second. You know what? I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. Hello, everyone. We're back. You are listening to Desert Rose. This is Drawing the Line, Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m., only on radio.dominican.edu. So, there is one last thing before I close up shop and whatnot. There is one last thing that I want to talk about with you guys, and it's anxiety issues. Now, you all are probably wondering why I'm talking about this. In fact, my shaky voice may even make you think that I have anxiety issues. And you know what? I do. I'm no expert, but I've been through it. And you don't always have to be an expert on something to give advice. People give advice from personal experiences alone. Let me tell you, anxiety sucks. It really does. Now, what made me talk about this? I got so nervous on my... Oh my god, I cannot believe I'm actually admitting this on live radio, but I'm going to anyway... Because, hey, it might actually help you guys. And, you know, I've learned that just talking stuff out also helps. But anyway, I got so nervous on my driving test that I failed it. This happened this morning. This morning. I won't go into details, but admitting that I failed it isn't easy, especially since I'm admitting this on live radio. So this isn't about what to do to pass your driving test. You know, I'm not a DMV instructor. For me, what's done is done. But know this, failing your driving test for the first time is not the end of the world. Yes, it's upsetting. Trust me, after days and days of practice and doing really well, there's nothing worse than having your confidence squashed like a bug when you fail at something. I would know. I can't even begin to describe the feeling of... Like, let's just say you're practicing for something, and you go in and you're like, oh my god, I got this, I'm gonna do this, I rock, I rule, I've got this unlocked, and I'm gonna do this! And then you take the test, or you do whatever you, and you do whatever you practiced for, and you failed. And when that happens, like I said, it's like your confidence just got squashed. Like a bug. Or if you want a better image, your confidence got squashed like the spider that I stepped on this morning. And actually, I didn't step on it. I purposely squashed it. That thing was huge, but you know what? Spiders. Not important right now. Actually, maybe I should give... Actually, in my next segment for next time, maybe I should give a segment on how to get over your fear of spiders. I think that'd be a good one. Seriously, raise of hands right now. Who's afraid of spiders? Anyone? That's what I thought. You are afraid of spiders. So, anyway, back to the issue at hand. Sorry, you know, sidetracked. So, here's some advice on how to help you deal with anxiety and how to overcome it. Just hold on one second. Okay, we're back. If you want to know what happened, I was actually having an anxiety issue there. See, I told you, it happens. So, anyway, here's some advice on how to help you deal with anxiety and how to overcome it. First off, know exactly what you are afraid of. You can't tackle the problem if you don't know what the problem is. What might help is writing down a list of stuff that scares you. This can include driving, which I'm afraid of. And earlier I just got done saying that there's nothing to be afraid of with driving. And I'm afraid of driving. Driving scares the living daylights out of me, but enough about me. So anyway, this can include driving, flying, taking a test, public speaking, anything at all. Second of all, once you know what the problem is, figure out why you're afraid. Are you afraid of driving because there are so many cars and so many things to remember? Are you afraid of flying because the turbulence? Or are you just afraid of heights? Write that down too. So anyway, once you figured all that out, like I said, it's important to acknowledge that you're afraid. It's also important to acknowledge what you're afraid of and figure out why you're afraid of. Like I said before, you can't tackle the problem if you don't know what the problem is. Third, and you know, this is just a piece of friendly advice. Third, never, ever, under any circumstances, feel that just because you are afraid of something that millions of other people do every day, that there's something wrong with you. Because there is nothing wrong with you. We all have fears. We're all afraid of something. I'm scared of driving, spiders, the dark. I'm scared of a lot of stuff. Some of the greatest actors of our time suffer from huge stage fright. I remember this one guy, I forget his name, but he was a very famous English stage actor. I think one of the biggest. I seriously forgot his name, but if I remember it, I'll let you guys know, but I probably won't. But there's a story, the story goes that he got so freaked out before he went on stage, so freaked out that he actually ran off, I think this is a story, but he actually ran off stage, got into a boat, jumped the English Channel, and I'm not going to say was never heard from again, but he didn't show his face for quite some time. Like I said, that's right. The professionals themselves get freaked out, get scared and freaked out. You are not alone. Trust me. Some things to do when you're having an anxiety issue is to take deep breathing exercises, listening to calming music, such as meditation. You know, YouTube has a lot of stuff. You know, you can actually find videos on YouTube, like 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour long videos of just, you know, sounds of nature. I actually found, I'm not even kidding you, an 8 hour video of just the sounds of nature. This included, like, you know, rain, like rain spells, storms, water running, that kind of stuff. So try listening to something that's relaxing. or you can repeat mantras to yourself, such as, I got this, I can do this, I'm smart, and I've got this on lockdown. Another thing you can do is meditation. Just sit calmly, relax, and close your eyes. Let all feelings of worry exit your body. This has always helped me a lot. Who knows? Maybe it could work for you too. And don't let negative things people say get to you. I know it's hard. I do. But try not to. Also, I've noticed that people are afraid from stuff that they read in magazines. The news has been known to exaggerate. I won't say that they outright lie, but they do stretch the truth. It's very important to analyze the situation before freaking out. Try doing this. Number one, admit that you're afraid. Come on, say it with me. I'm afraid. Number two, now say what you are afraid of. I'm afraid of, I don't know, I'm afraid of driving. There you go, afraid of driving, or I'm afraid of spiders, or I'm afraid of this, or I'm afraid of that. Number three, now say exactly why you are afraid. I'm afraid of driving because there are so many cars on the road. I'm afraid of spiders because they're creepy, and personally I think it's a great against nature to have that many eyes and that many legs. As a friend of mine once said, if it has more than four legs, it is untrustworthy. Number four, research fear of driving. Research any fear you have. Type it into Google and I will guarantee you 110%, I will guarantee you 110% that Google will have pages and pages about your issue and how to overcome it. Number four, read up on the facts. What some people may say about your fear may not be true. Think about what you're reading. Ask yourself questions such as, is that true? Can that really happen? What do the experts say? And tell yourself stuff like, you know what, this really interests me and I want to look it up. Knowing something is power. It's natural to be afraid of something that you don't understand, but you'll never get anywhere if you don't research the problem and try to tackle it. And that's all the time we have left for today. One of my favorite DJs just walked into the station. Hi. She just said hi. She's awesome. And she's going to take over for you guys. So this is DJ Desert Rose, and you are listening to Drawing the Line. Tune in to me Mondays from 1 to 2 p.m. Hope only on radio.dominican.edu. I hope you guys have a great afternoon.